if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen,
country, and video games. BRB UK.
Worse teeth,
better accents.
Welcome to episode 314 of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast. I am Coleman. Hi!
You're not Dan.
No, I'm not Dan, and I'm also back from what feels like forever. I think it's a month away from the show. I've never been this long away from the show, but now I'm back and I'm all full of beans. Ow!
How did we survive without you? More importantly, how did you get full of beans?
Coffee, mostly.
Right.
Yeah. That noise of the man that is so desperate to be heard. It's Mr. Timothy Kenneth James Hibbs.
Hello, sir.
He loves being full named.
I really don't.
He loves it. Every time, he loves it.
I don't even like when you use my full first name, let alone my full actual name. But anyway.
Timmy Bibbles Kenneth James Hibbs. Yeah, I got it. Right, we're trying something a little bit different today. We are doing all people in the same room, round a table, with microphones, which is good because we had an internet problem. So we've called upon a third host who is here, returning to the show since episode 300, I believe you were last on.
Yes, son Coleman, and I'm very glad to be here.
It's not my mother. Ed.
Hi, I'm the best one.
Oh, okay. Didn't get
How
that
you doing?
In the memo. All right, so the shambles is already upon us. It does mean we are recording on a single feed. It does mean it makes editing, one, easier for me, but two, harder to remove mistakes where we talk over each other, cough, sniff, all those
There's
lovely
nothing
things.
Nothing you can do about this, Cole.
Things like that. I can't make sounds seamless anymore, so we're just going to have to go with it for this week at least.
Doing it live.
Well, before we start, I just want to say thanks for coming back from your month-long excursion. Did you find out who beheaded that Turkish journalist? Or...
You can't give away his ultra-secret identity job thing.
We staged it so it looked like the Russians killed me for a bit. My wife is not happy.
And now WWE can't go to Saudi Arabia.
Oh, no.
And that's how that ends.
All jokes that make no sense to most people that listen to this show. Anyway, yes, so we have some headlines and we have some... We've got a free couple of pretty big ones. I'm going to leave the bigger, more ramblier one for last. But first of all, good news.
Good news.
So you may have heard there was a problem with the PlayStation 4 that was reported. There was a lot of users saying that they were receiving a weird message that was then bricking their system, which is not good news.
Was that you, Coleman?
No, it was not me.
And sure?
I'm one of those users that makes sure that they can't receive messages from strangers, so I wasn't affected. Lovely. Now, Sony has since come out and said that this error wasn't bricking the system, it was putting it in a constant reset cycle. Mm. So it was just, it was starting up, stopping, starting up, stopping, starting up, stopping, and they've since rolled out a patch that will fix it. So if you are affected by this problem, it can be fixed. You don't have to go and return your console or order a new one or anything. What you got to do is go get the PlayStation app on your mobile, go into your messages, check for mysterious messages, delete the message, and then go to your PlayStation 4, go into safe mode, and then select rebuild database, which some people tend to do if the system's starting to run a little bit sluggish. Mm. It's a lovely thing to do. It means every single icon then appears on your screen for a time until it's decided which is the one you like to play most. But anyway, there is a fix in place. If you are affected, that is the way you fix it. And maybe go in your settings and make sure that strangers can't send you messages. That's a...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
I need to warn my dad then, because he does not do that.
He loves messages from strangers.
He loves people going, "Hey, what are you up to? Can I steal your profile for no reason?
Penile enhancements!"
Good news, everyone!
Herbal Viagra, I'm in!
I mean, with the Sony stuff, I'm very glad that it's been fixed, but it's also one of those things of... I'm kind of concerned that it was a problem in the first place, because I remember years back on the PlayStation 3 where they had the massive outage because it got hacked, PSN was down for weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, slightly different, though. No, this is someone taking advantage of their messaging system and finding a loophole through that, basically.
It sort of is and it sort of isn't, because it is sort of taking advantage of flaws within the Sony security systems.
Yeah.
Basically, they have to spend so much money to try and keep all the servers afloat and all that, but also, from what I understand with a lot of companies like that, they do kind of use very low-end security and they just kind of hope that people don't hack it a lot of the time. So,
well, they had a very quick fix for this. It was obviously something that was, I hate to use the word ingenious, but ingenious in a devious way type thing. You know what I mean? And it was something that didn't do any major damage, but could cause someone a lot of aggro, especially when they don't know what's going on with it, kind of thing.
Yeah. I also wonder if it's one of those things where a lot of people who were working on security, like, did sort of know it was a problem and were like, this is a problem, and someone higher up went, it's not going to be a problem.
That is a thing that's cropped up, again, kind of harkening back to the PS3 outage, because this was a problem that was being reported and seemed to have been getting ignored by PlayStation until they had an answer, which, if you remember the PlayStation outage, people were reporting it and they weren't answering until they went, oh yeah, it's a problem that will be fixed in the next day or two. And then they went, no, we screwed up. Oh, we've screwed up badly. Your security details may be at risk. Sorry.
I told you not to put them in the .txt file. Damn it, Steve.
Anywho, more information this week. So BlizzCon's coming up, BlizzCon 2018. And to celebrate, Blizzard have launched their new line of BlizzCon 2018 merch that they put up on the store. And there are a few items that bear the name Diablo Reign of Terror, which people have got all whipped up in a frenzy and gone, ooh, new Diablo game, or maybe a new Diablo expansion.
Yeah.
So they were expecting that to be announced at BlizzCon, which it very well may be, but those folks at Blizzard, they've gone on the Blizzard forums and they said, we've seen a lot of rumors flying around about our plans for Diablo at the show. These are very exciting times. We have multiple teams working on different Diablo projects. We can't wait to tell you about them when the time is right, which some people are taking as they've now quenched the idea of it coming to BlizzCon, but
they didn't say it isn't.
I reckon BlizzCon, we get an announcement of a new DLC, because we haven't had much in the way of paid DLC in Blizzard 3, and Diablo 3, plus that Diablo 3 Switch port is not long due out. 1 month, I think it's coming out. Less than that, probably.
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
I think it's available to preload already. I'm going to pick that up because it was fun. Yeah, so you don't want to go, Diablo 4's are now, who's Diablo 3 on the Switch?
Yeah.
So, and I reckon that they might go, like, a co-project name splash screen type thing for the people at the event, but nothing more than that.
I think it might be something that they sort of say, look, it is coming, but it's maybe not coming till about 2020. But it's one of those difficult things of, obviously, like, you should always take every leap with a pinch of salt, but also, if people have seen merchandise with it, that sort of stuff has to be ordered, like, very much in advance, and that sort of gets leaked. That's usually sometimes a bit more easier than someone on 4chan, for example, going.
Yeah, but I don't know. To me, Reign of Terror, particularly in a subtitle kind of context, that sounds a lot more expansion-y than it does new game.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I wonder if it's going to be something that maybe doesn't come to the Switch, or if it's something where they say, look, it is coming to the Switch, but it's not going to be in the base package, because it's going to be obviously a bit way too late for that at this point, I suppose.
Another interesting thing I'm kind of leaving out of the story here was there's statue of Diablo, I think they're selling at the event or giving away at the event, and it very much looks like the design of the original Diablo from Diablo 1. So that sparked rumors that there could be a Diablo remaster.
Right.
Remake.
It could just also be the fact that that's something that's a statue that particularly makes sense to give to fans that are going to BlizzCon. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it could just be that.
It would seem weird if they did do a reboot after, because last year they did the event that if you played through, you could unlock the original FMV ending for Diablo and stuff. And
yeah. You can see them playing their cards close to their chest at the moment because they want to keep those announcements fresh for BlizzCon so that it makes some headlines when they do make those announcements, basically. But yeah, might as well wait and see till then, basically, you know?
Yeah. I didn't realize that Diablo was an actual person. I thought it was just the name of the game.
It's the name of the devil, basically.
Oh, well, why didn't they just call it Devil?
Right. I don't know. When I was a kid, I used to mistake Diablo for Dungeon Keeper. Quite a lot.
Yeah. No hablo español. Es difícil, no?
Diablo may be, you know, more Googleable.
Touché.
Rockstar.
Right. Baby, I'm a rockstar.
You've released the elephant in the room.
This is
Rampage round.
The big news. You may have heard something about it. It's kind of whipped social media into a frenzy and many other sites and podcasts and stuff. So there was a whole thing where the Rockstar co-founder, vice president of creativity, Dan Houser, he did an interview with Vulture, and he said that the team behind Rockstar 2 were working 100-hour weeks in a comment. And that has sparked up arguments about crunch, which is something that's come up many times in the past. And we all go, oh, this is a big problem. And then we move on.
And we ignore it.
Yeah. And not just in the games industry, many industries. I myself experienced similar things, just I'd never worked in games, so it happens everywhere. So
I don't think you can call like a military operation a crime. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping that we are at the watershed moment of it, what with Telltale like last month, and like people are still very angry about that. Like every time Telltale are coming out with, we're still going to try and get the final season of The Walking Dead out, everyone's like, pay your staff. Like there's more talks of a union, like unions for games than ever before. Yeah.
This is a difficult one for me. Look, I definitely see the place for more workers' rights for people working in game development, and this industry is making a ridiculous amount of money. It's, you know, the entertainment industry that's grossing the most amount of money, and like it needs to grow and develop in some of the ways that other industries already have, like the movie industry. But it's a weird one for me because I'm not completely anti-union, and it's not generally a thing, but for me, I'd rather we were concentrating on developing workers' rights that encompass everyone, not just one industry. Part of the problem here is that the games industry and voice actors, and particularly is one I'm going to highlight because that's been on the agenda before, voice actors have been trying to fight for the same basic rights that actors have already fought for and won, and they don't have those rights. And it's a very similar industry, and they should be protected by the same and governed by similar rules.
I thought that was sorted in the end because...
As I said, it has
not
been...
Not 100%, but I remember...
It has seemed to have had a progression, at least, basically.
Yeah, they got better rights and stuff because I remember they went back and redubbed Life is Strange Before the Storm, like with Ashley, once she was like confirmed as being able to come back because they sort the whole thing. Yeah, so.
But then that's something that I believe that should be rights for people in the games industry, and that needs to be looked at. I'm just not necessarily wholeheartedly behind exclusively supporting a union to go after those rights when I think they should be better protected by society in general, as should a lot of other workers in other industries that aren't as glamorous or as focused on. The one difference here and the reason why it definitely needs to happen in the games industry is the amount of money that the games industry is making.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's also like really seedy things that companies do, like they'll fire a lot of staff just before the game comes out so they don't have to be paying royalties. If anyone leaves during the game cycle, then they get taken out of the credits so they can't even claim that they worked on it. Like, there's loads of, like, really horrible, shifty things that companies do because they're just not held accountable enough. I completely agree with you in terms of, like, the unions and stuff, but I think the reason it tends to come up as much in games is because it is, at this point, fairly well known that a lot of companies do just treat their employees like dirt.
But that needs to be reflected and dealt with in a way that is either more upfront and honest, and like this is a cyclical thing, therefore you will get paid higher in the short period you're working for is to reflect that you might not go straight onto another job kind of thing. Or there needs to be better rights and better contracts in terms of doing that. But then the problem here becomes, and I'm not saying those people shouldn't have those rights, but if you put much more stringent controls on rights and blah, 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 do we just see more cases of Telltale where the company goes under and takes all the jobs with them type thing? I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't do it just because of that. I'm just saying that is the consideration and risk you need to put into place in pushing that too far kind of thing.
It's a really difficult dilemma for a lot of companies because, you know, like you say, if they suddenly run out of funding, they might not actually be able to continue making the games. But then you could also argue that if they are in that position, then they shouldn't be putting themselves at such risk as well. Mm. It's a really difficult thing. And like, I mean, I don't think there is a straight answer to everything, but there is definitely, as long as the conversation keeps going. And I think that's why I said, like, we seem to be passing a semi-watershed thing where we're still discussing it even like a month later.
Yeah.
When usually the zeitgeist means that like, we'll forget in a week. I mean, it is because of Red Dead that it's being discussed again. And isn't it also that Dan Houser then turned around and said, well, actually, it was just the writing staff. It was the writing staff, guys.
Yeah,
it wasn't the other people.
Yeah, so Rockstar did release a further statement, and it was Houser clarifying his comments. He said the 100-hour work week sentiment was explicitly about him and his writing team, which is himself, Mike Unsworth, Robert Humphreys, and Laszlo Jones, and said basically along the lines of, we're doing 100-hour weeks because we're passionate about the project. Yeah. It's our choice. It's not we're being made to do it. Okay, that's taken, and some people took that as okay, some people took that as backpedaling, But that's, you were saying this has carried on further today, Tim.
There has been a few further things back and forth on social media. There is a few people that I happen to follow that work within Rockstar and stuff like that. And generally today, they, in general, throughout social media, there was quite a few conversations going on about this. And this is part of the reason behind this is apparently that Rockstar came out and removed the block they had on their staff openly talking about their working conditions on social media.
Well, that's NDAs, good. Yeah. Transparency is always good.
And apparently, at least saying that, you know, you can go and say a warts and all type of thing. And whereas there may be some cynicism and there may be some people that obviously didn't experience that, most of the sort of the volume of traffic seems to be saying that, it, you know, I haven't worked anything like these amount of hours. The most I've done is 50 a week, which I think is a reasonable working week in comparison to some of the other stuff we were saying. But it becomes difficult to know. But there are, as I said, there's a couple of people I just happen to follow that just through social media interactions, I follow and they follow me sort of thing on Twitter. And they are people that I've come to know through, you know, as much as, you know, just social media interactions. So I don't know them that well, but I know them enough to know the type of thing that they would be saying, and they wouldn't necessarily just come out and say it because the company line was to say so. And so therefore I trust it a little bit more from those sources that I've seen it from.
They're being genuine. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I trust the people that are saying that to be genuine type thing. And so that gives me a little bit more faith. The other thing that I think is muddying the waters a little bit that I saw confusing the conversation beforehand, and I'm not saying this totally washes the hands of Rockstar or certainly 2K from any wrongdoings, because they've been because Rockstar themselves have been accused of some things in the past.
Yep.
And
Team Bondi, I got a whole book.
No, but that's what I'm saying. The whole Team Bondi thing, yeah, is a slightly separate kettle of
fish. No, it is.
That is a separate company in a separate country,
yeah,
that was associated with Rockstar, and I believe they had some involvement with helping in the development of the game, but as a kind of more subsidiary type thing. And I think, I don't know if Rockstar owned a percentage of the company or it was just 2K that owned the company.
I'm not really sure exactly how that worked.
But, you know, it was an associated company rather than the company themselves. I'm not saying, as I said, it doesn't completely excuse them of all blame. And they've had accusations of being banned in the past. Also, as a lot of people pointed out, most of the people and the people that I was talking about to give, you know, full sort of perspective there, most of the people that are talking positively are from Rockstar Scotland,
yep,
you know, or from the Scottish HQ, which tends to have better working rights than they possibly have in America, where, as people pointed out, it's a bit more of a problem because you're dealing with the issue of your healthcare for yourself and most of your family in a lot of cases.
Then there's the group, the Wives of Rockstar, and this was, I think this was back in April. The Wives of Rockstar is a group of basically partners of various Rockstar developers, or people that work within Rockstar, that banded together and basically came public and said, our partners work too much, we don't get to see them. Mm. And they weren't happy about it. And that's kind of taken into account on this as well.
Yeah, I think the other reason it's blown up quite a lot as well is, like, Rockstar is one of the biggest game companies out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. GTA 5 is the biggest piece of entertainment media.
Yeah.
You know, it's made the most money. That's it. Full
just
stop.
Like, it's been in the top 20, like the top 10 UK best-selling games for like 3 or 4 years. Mm. I have 2 copies and I don't even like the game. Like, but at that point, like, when you're being paid that much, when you're that big, you should be held accountable and you should make sure that you set a guideline for everyone else. You should be the people that everyone looks to,
it
and goes,
be the
right,
pinnacle, basically.
Yes,
yeah,
that, exactly that. And the fact that this story sort of makes it sound like they're not, just sort of, I think another reason it's become so big is because it just sort of seems emblematic of the rest of the industry in a way that people want it to stop.
Yeah, again, right, playing slightly devil's advocate, I don't know of the business arrangement side of things of how much of the top end of that money Rockstar earns compared to 2K. Again, they should be very well paid. They should be able to afford to pay all their staff very well in terms of not having to overwork any one individual enough to be able to hire enough people to make that not a problem, basically. And for me, the bigger problem is not necessarily Dan Houser working 100 hours. He can choose to do that. Mm-hmm. That's fine. What he shouldn't be doing, and the fundamental problem I have with his original statement. Also bear in mind that this got blown up by headlines picking on the original article, which didn't particularly reference, I don't think, the 100-hour thing, no. It was other articles referencing the 100-hour thing as a headline that brought this slightly more to the fray. So again, putting that slightly into perspective. But he shouldn't be saying the 100-hour thing and as a badge of honour that is reflective of quality. Because what he's doing there is saying, if you work 100-hour weeks, you make a better game. That should not be the message from one of the highest grossing companies that, you know, making the game next, that should be in the best position within the industry to not have to do that, basically.
Not in reference of 100 hours, but in a lot of hours. The way it was kind of pointed to me is, if you are working more hours than your project requires, you are a terrible project manager.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to have to leave that one on that, because we've got a few points of interest.
I'll just make one
more
point. Maybe they should have used those 100 hours to learn how to write for women. You go.
Look, you don't understand. They've got complex walking animations and fighting animations that just, they have to program all new characters.
They have to learn how to stereotype women in brand new ways.
I might be mixing Ubisoft and Rockstar here a little bit. Anyway.
You're mixing up your excuse, mate.
Well, I'll go. The Rockstar excuse was, we don't have female protagonists in GTA because we don't want to see women do these horrible things. There's kind of like a gentry there that I kind of respect, but at the same time... Yeah,
let me open this door for you, m'lady. Dan Hells is just tipping his fedora.
Just tipping his fedora, yeah, yeah.
Tipping his £1 billion fedora.
Anyway, points of interest.
Can't afford more staff, I bought this hat.
But it is a golden hat. And it lets women know I'll open doors for them.
How many Megalodon cards do you think he spent on that hat? A new Xbox One update has been released this week, and it adds both Alexa support and the long-awaited revamped avatar system.
Phew! I couldn't wait for either.
That's Alexa support for the US only, sadly. Which means you can use Alexa for voice commands, such as turning off and on the Xbox console, as well as launching games, starting and stopping broadcasts on Mixer, taking screenshots, and more.
Alexa, pretend you're in America.
We don't actually have Alexa in this one.
I thought the Microsoft
thing
was...
I've been yelling at stuff at Alexa for months for no reason. Oh. I thought it was just really bad.
That's sad news. Alexa played Despacito. I mean, I thought the Microsoft thing was Cortana. So is there any way that you can, like, pit
Alexa against
Cortana? You can use Alexa
with Cortana. Yes, that is a thing.
You can pit them against each other.
Really? You can just
I don't think you can do that. I mean, I've got a Google Home, and my girlfriend has the Amazon Echo.
Do they fight? Yeah.
You can sit them next to each other and go, hey, Google, okay, Alexa, and you can make them talk to each other. It's quite funny. And they'll have a little chat. And they'll do that for a little bit and then just shut off when they're done. So the avatar system, I actually had a go on that today. I revamped my character, and the first thing I noticed is my avatar has no neck. That was quite funny. Yeah. It's just a head, like, in his chest.
Did you also find out what the bottom of your avatar shoe looked like?
No. Bam! But yeah, I had to play around with it. It looks a little bit Pixar-esque. It's cute. I messed around with it for a bit and made a bald guy with a beard and then sat him on a pink unicorn, as you do. And then after I noticed a couple of things is that all the items and stuff you've earned in-game or maybe bought on the marketplace, all gone.
Really?
Yeah, there's some versions of the official Xbox stuff, like Master Chief costume or the Gears of War t-shirts and stuff that they've reproduced the new ones, that you got to buy again. Because I know I've got that Gears of War t-shirt. Yeah.
So what happens to, like, because there was quite a few games when they were first in the avatar system where when you got certain achievements, you could get those avatar clothings. Because I know I've got a fair few, basically.
They're for the 360 avatar only. But you can keep the original one. And if you change it and you go, I don't like it, you can then switch back to the default one, which is quite cute because it brings up the two side by side and your new one will be like, hey, and look, waving to your avatar and stuff. I thought that was quite funny for a moment.
Can you make the old one and the new one kiss?
That'd be awesome.
Alexa, make them kiss.
But there's a whole thing of it. So you can have a character that's got a missing limbs, or you can have a character that's in a wheelchair. So that's kind of cool. And there's a very different various body sizes and weights and things that didn't exist in the previous one. There's more customizable options with hair and eyes and things. And so that's all very nice. But
could you make your pink unicorn look like your actual pink unicorn?
Can I just try something? Alexa,
download... We don't have Alexa!
No. This is for the people listening at home.
Anyone listening at home on speakers.
This has got really...
Alexa,
really
download all episodes of the BRB UK podcast.
Oh, all right, I'll let you off there.
That's all right, that's good.
I think you have to voluntarily add those kind of commands in yourself for that to work. So you can't just go...
Well, if anyone ended up downloading all the episodes of the BRB UK podcast, and Alexa, subscribe to the BRB UK podcast, let us know if that worked. If not, I tried.
There you go. Discord, we spoke about Discord first, the new store.
Yeah, the Discord first party publishing.
Yeah. Yes. First on Discord, that's it. Well, that's the publishing as well as the store. That initially was only available on beta in Canada. They've now done a worldwide launch for the beta as well, so you can pick that up if you wish. And they're also releasing their universal library, which allows all users to launch all of their PC titles from Discord, regardless of where the game was purchased, which is nice.
So in future podcasts, you're barely going to be able to hear Dan, because he'll be playing Destiny in the background pretending he's not.
Yeah, that sounds right.
You hear him go, "Oh, ghost."
Click, 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 click.
Oh, ghost.
Click, 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 click.
Give me a kiss, ghost. And you'll be like, "Dan, are you fine?
Now,
is that why he's not here today?"
Doesn't he have an Alexa ghost?
Yes. You know he does.
Hitman 2, that is just under a month from launching, and you may remember with the first Hitman reboot. Was it a reboot or part of the series?
It's technically a new one, I think, but it was just called Hit. They did that confusing thing that all games do, where they go, right, let's just ruin the SEO of every one of our
two. Good, okay. The previous Hitman game, we'll call it.
Yep.
They brought in a system called Elusive Targets, where...
the game formerly known as Hitman.
The game
Hitman
formerly
2016.
Known as Hitman. Hitman 2016. That
I can't believe they made 2015 more.
God damn it, Ed. So there was a thing called Elusive Targets. They would be a target that you'd... I think you get one chance of taking them out, and then they're gone forever. So you have to be really careful on how you deal with the system. As the title suggests, they are elusive targets. And elusive. Then they did a poll where you could vote on who would be the celebrity elusive target, which was Gary Busey. Well, they're doing similar again, but without the poll. They've announced the first elusive target. I think they're going to go celebrities for all of them, but the first elusive target is a character played by Sean Bean, which would make sense.
That's
as
so
he
good.
Likes to die in things.
Yeah, he likes to die first.
He has something like a 50% survival rate in all of the media that he appears in.
Sorry, slight spoilers for everything Sean Bean's ever been in.
Flip a coin, he might live, he might die.
Doesn't die in pixels.
Wait, he's in pixels?
He's in pixels.
Everyone Why? Should have died in pixels.
I hope he dies in every film from now on. I don't. Legends was very good, if underrated.
There's a trailer out now. It features Sean Bean playing the character. I think he's meant to be a hitman himself or some kind of spy or something.
Yeah, my understanding was that he is a spy himself or an assassin because he has like a weird name that I can't remember.
Bridges. it's Sheen Bean. Sheen Bean is the...
No, he's Sean Connery. And he goes around going, that's right, I'm the Bond.
It's a whole video of Sean Bean just interacting with objects in a room, like just chewing the scenery and goading Agent 47. And then it zooms out and Agent 47's watching him. So
yeah, no, the name was something odd. I can't remember what it was, though.
The Undying.
The Undying.
That was his nickname.
Because he's good at escaping death.
Yeah.
Which is ironic.
Yeah.
Anyway, the final Stanley Parable achievement is now available to unlock. If you're wondering why that's news, Stanley Parable, that released 5 years ago on the 17th of October.
Oh, Christ.
And there was an achievement in-game called Now Go Outside. It's where you have to stop playing the game for 5 years and then come back to it, which if you played it on day one and... Now you can go back to it and get that achievement, but a lot of people didn't, so they're going to have to come back to it later.
I remember like back when that was just a random Source demo. So like, I remember when
I remember two endings.
I remember playing that one. And then like I remember when Stanley Parable came out, like, I can't believe that's 5 years ago. And like literally it was like me and all my friends at the time were sitting in a room, like, and we were all just like debating, all right, we're gonna do this. Okay, no, do that. What happens if we try this? And like it was one of the most fun party games that I'd ever played, even though it was ostensibly single player. So at least one nice thing, which is probably what they were thinking of at the time, is now everyone can go back and like maybe reintroduce it to some more friends, because they've not done too much since. They did Beginner's Guide, which was
because the team split, didn't they?
I think one of them did it was Dr. Langskopf and the Lion and the Diamond or something that had Simon Amstel, and now he's doing stuff with
He went off to form Squanch Tendo with Justin Roiland, which is now Squanch something or other. They've changed the name
because
they were worried Nintendo might sue them.
Yeah.
Understandably.
And then, but Beginner's Guide is also a very, very interesting look at storytelling, but Stanley Parable is still... It still really, really holds up, even now 5 years later.
Yeah, actually all three of those do. Yeah, Stanley Parable, I remember when that released, a blurb for a review said, can we review Stanley Parable without spoiling anything? And then you opened up and went, yes, it's good, go buy it, 10 out of 10. But yeah, if you haven't played Stanley Parable, go do it, it's really good.
Probably be on sale soon as well, knowing that achievement.
Good time to say I've never played it.
It's a good time to say that when we do Extra Life, I'll bring it. We'll download it on Steam.
We'll That's play not it a game to keep you awake, though.
Oh, but if Tim's not played it before, though, and like if when he's in like hour 20 and he doesn't know what's real or not,
that's a bad time to play anything.
That might be the best idea, though.
Stanley can't keep awake. What?
What we'll do is he'll play it and I'll just stand in the corner and go, Tim. Tim.
Yeah.
Terramasalata.
Surely we can get that voice actor to come in.
Probably. I don't think he's doing much these days.
Just record a few lines for us.
I think that was the game where they put in custom streamlines for certain people.
Yeah, they sent out demos to streamers and then they changed the names from Stanley to whoever was streaming the game.
Yeah. Let's get them on the horn. I doubt they're doing that much.
Sure. Okay. We'll work on that. Anyway, that's all the news for this week. So we're going to talk about what we done played, and we've got some flipping good games to talk about this week. Shall we start with you, Ed?
I've been playing the least recent thing of everyone, because I've been playing Yakuza 2 Kiwami, which basically a couple years back I played 4 because it was on PlayStation Plus. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know anything about it other than it was a bit of a cult series. And I instantly got it the moment when I was walking through Kamurocho and some people tried to start a fight with me, and I found out I could pick up a bicycle and beat someone pretty much half to death with it. And from then on, I've been absolutely in love with the series. One way I try and describe it is it's like the Japanese GTA meets Seinfeld a lot of the time, because for every really serious story development, there's a weird side quest where, for example, oh, someone's been stealing my panties. Can you help me track down the panty thief? It's very Japanese. And it's stuff like that. For every hard-hitting drama of, oh no, how did someone broke me out of prison, but they're also trying to kill me. What's going on? And then 20 minutes later, you're having a punching fight with a bear. So
and then it goes doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah.
Doodle-a-doo.
There's dudes running on snowballs.
And it tells the joke on stage.
Yeah.
There's, so in Two Kiwami, there's side quests. One I literally did the other day was you get in a fight with people, and to apologize, the boss invites you to come to his weird brothel. And it turns out everyone's wearing diapers. And it's a weird fetish thing. And
as you do.
You sort of go,
there's men in diapers.
This is fine. It's this is fine, but can you not force your fetish on people? And then he's like, how dare you? And then you beat him up and all of his dudes come out afterwards and go, thanks, that was really weird.
Japan.
It's a very, very Japanese series. Also, the other reason I've been playing it so much is because I went to Japan a couple months ago, and one of the reasons was because of the series. So I literally, when I was in Tokyo, I went...
Beat a man to death with a bicycle.
I cannot go back.
Went to a nappy bar.
Thought you'd one-up Jake Paul.
I did go to the part of Tokyo that Kamurocho is based on, and then after about half an hour, I walked past someone who looked like they were in... because I went, I need to leave immediately.
Oh, wow.
So one thing is some of the recreations, you can tell where they've changed it for the games, and you can tell where they've just done it to recreate it. So there was moments I was walking down the streets going, oh my God, it is exactly the same. And Two Kiwami sort of goes to Sotenbori, which is based off Dotenbori, the actual Osaka city where I was staying for most of a week.
Right.
So whenever I feel holiday sick now, I just I go to that bit and I just stand by the river and go, oh, Japan is so expensive to fly to. So get into the game. So last year they released Zero, which was an amazing prequel set in the 80s, and it introduced the characters. Mm. Last year they did Kiwami, which is a remake of the first in the engine of Zero. So the way that I say is play Zero first, then go straight into 1.
See, I've been told to play 1 first because Zero is a prequel.
Play Zero, because it is a prequel and because Kiwami references things that happen in Zero.
Okay.
So there's like certain side quests and stuff that if you played Zero, you understand a bit more. So okay. In Zero, there's Pocket Circuit, which is like a Scalextrics thing of like, and it's like a really intense like side story with like a really good story attached to it. And then when you play Kiwami, that comes back because that wasn't in the original games. They've just bought it in because it was in Zero.
Okay.
In 2, one of the side quests refers to Majima-san's like story in Zero as well. So I would say start with Zero, go straight into 1, and then play 2. 2 is based off the engine of 6, which I've also got but haven't been able to play yet. And
so we start a graph.
Yeah, this is more confusing than like an Xbox numbering system.
Listeners can't see, but Ed's literally got different game printouts on the wall. He's connecting them with red wool.
Yeah, bits of red string.
I've turned off the lights. I've locked the doors. The PowerPoint is on. There is no escape. But 2 is, if you go with 0, then 1, then 2, 2 is absolutely fantastic. Graphically, it is absolutely beautiful. Like I say, when you walk through certain parts of the town, it looks so much like real life that I went, oh my God, am I on drugs yet?
Thank God I was wearing this nappy.
The fighting system's really refined. Graphically, it's really good. There's loads of like really good side stories. They bring back the Hostess Club stuff from Zero, but it's a lot more streamlined and fun to play, for example. And it takes something like, maybe if you just go through like the main story, it takes maybe something like 20, 25 hours. And I'm on chapter like 5 of 20, and I've spent like 15, 16 hours so far. So
it's more about the messing around.
It is as deep as you want it to be, because there's like 50 or 60 side stories.
Lots of mini games and that type of stuff.
There's karaoke. Like I say, there's the Hostess Club.
Oh, karaoke.
Zero's got the best karaoke songs as well. If you've ever wanted to see a man who could literally kill you with a knife dance in a weird like roller derby song as he goes, "I love you and then you love me." I'd say definitely pick him up. Kiwami,
just as a point of fact, anyone could kill me with a knife. Am I alone here?
But are they
kill
also
me with a pencil, Ed? I'm not saying I'm weak, but just at the right time, you know, take him from surprise.
Yeah, but do you also wear an eye patch and are called the Mad Dog of Shimano?
Only on a Friday.
That's a similar thing to Sleeping Dogs. That was one of the things I loved about Sleeping Dogs. You like murder people, and then all of a sudden you go to a karaoke bar and just sing like Ramones, "I Want to Be Sedated" or something.
What do you think murderers do?
Or Pat Benatar. That's the best bit. He's like, you just kick the holy hell out of some dudes.
Can't murder all day.
And he's like, "Hit me with your best shot."
Without, you know, a bit of a release, some here. Some people, you know, the karaoke killer.
Sleeping Dogs is still one of the most underrated games of last year.
Oh, it's brilliant.
I'll end the Kiwami discussion by saying Kiwami comes out as November PlayStation Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably still a good jumping off point.
Okay.
I would say go with Zero first, but if you've got PlayStation Plus, Kiwami is also a really great jumping off point.
Okay.
Well, I may go Kiwami because it's PS Plus, and then I'll have a look at the Christmas sales. And
I'll end Zero if you want.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I don't mind paying for good games.
Yeah. It's I think it's PlayStation Greatest Hits as well.
Yes, we did talk about that a little while ago. Yeah. All right, well, talking about paying for great games.
Yeah.
Tim paid for what? Well, he didn't pay for it. But one hell of a game you could pay for, and boy, you got to pay for it. Starlink, Tim.
Yeah, well, look, preface this by saying also, just because it reminds me, I didn't actually mention last week, I got a review code for Space Hulk Tactics as well, basically.
Ah, right.
Which I did enjoy, but just didn't preface it with that, basically. So just putting that out there. But also, this is a weird one. I got sent a starter pack for Starlink, which I'll come on to exactly what that is in a second. But I also got
starter pack, Tim.
I also got sent the digital downloadable deluxe version as a code, as a review code. So been given various things for review, but I also kind of got the best from both worlds in this in a way. And I'll come back to all of that in a second, because let's talk about the actual game first.
Let's do that.
I thought we were going to talk about Miley Cyrus, the best of both worlds.
No.
Ooh.
The game is fantastic. I actually would go as far as to say I love the game, basically. Put it this way.
Go on.
No.
Say it.
I think this will put it in an even higher context. There are two open world games that I've played to completion this year. Yeah? God of War, Spider-Man.
Yep.
They are my two favorite games possibly of all time, putting in that sort of context. They're definitely in the contention. This may be the third open world game that I finished to completion.
Ooh.
Because I really, really like playing through it.
That does come with a few caveats. Again, I'll put them to one side for the moment. But like, just in terms of the gameplay, basically, if you're playing this on Xbox on PS4, it's a slightly different proposition to playing it on the Switch. I did get the Switch version, and that's the one I've been playing for review, so that's the one that I will mainly concentrate on, and we'll come on to why that makes... Well, no, actually, no, let's discuss that up front, because that's a big difference. The Switch version comes with Star Fox content. The starter pack for Switch comes with the Arwing and Fox McCloud, and also one of the base pilots that's in the game, who I forget the name of.
Jeff Bridges.
Because they're
all, right. Sir Sean Bean.
Mason Rana.
There Mason go. Rana.
But that's part of the problem for me. There's a lot of the base characters in the game. Well, the base gameplay is basically what I wanted No Man's Sky to be, almost, kind of thing, out of the box. But to say this is a reduction of No Man's Sky is a bit reductive, basically. It's something where they've kind of taken that formula. It's not like the... exploring a massive endless universe, it's exploring one solar system type thing, and as it's applied, Atlas, as the name, the full name of the game is Starlink Battle for Atlas, as that supplies, this is literally a battle for that solar system. And there's a kind of hierarchy to the enemies that you're facing. When you, say, initially land on a planet and it's been conquered by this kind of alien race that you're fighting against, and you're kind of building up your alliance resources and getting other aliens on that planet to join that alliance, you kind of fight back against these enemies who are sending raiding parties out against these kind of outposts and stuff that you're trying to defend and get to join your alliance. So initially you can kind of fight back against some of those raiding parties, save those things, make some friends, and then do some minor missions for them. Eventually you'll want to progress to fighting back against the kind of things that are sending out those raiding parties, the first one of which are these extractors, which are these kind of generally something built around a central core. That core generally isn't available to attack until you've hit some outer nodes that then reveal a central thing that you need to actually do the damage to, basically. And there's various, not kind of puzzle solving elements, but various different elements to how you attack those and how those defend themselves and how you interact with those. And there's usually a group of enemies defending them as well, basically. So it's just a matter of getting in there, doing the damage, doing that. You take down extractors to weaken a prime, which is a kind of spider-like, well, not quite spider, but four-legged kind of...
crab monster.
Big enemy crab monster type thing.
It's got glowy bits. Yeah. Shoot the glowy bits
and die. And you weaken, and you take down the primes on a planet, and the prime is the thing going around putting these all extractors down, and then they strengthen the prime. You take down the extractors to weaken the prime. You take down primes on various different planets to weaken a dreadnought, which is a massive ship that is launching the primes.
Right.
So there's a couple of little minor spoilers there, but just to give you an idea of like the overall structure of the game. And that is the general structure of the game, and you're kind of fighting back against these primes, and these primes are actually launched on in-game timers as well. So you have to be wary of when you're attacking the dreadnought in relation to when it's launching the next prime, because when it launches the next prime, it'll actually get harder to actually defeat that dreadnought.
Gotcha.
So... you can't go too much off the beaten path and do stuff, which is sometimes a shame because some of the stuff off the beaten path is kind of what you want to do, and you know, in an open world game,
it's a cool game of flying around space. Yeah.
But it does kind of give a proper sense of urgency to the main structure of the game. As I said, there's the Star Fox content that I've been playing in Switch, and that papers over the cracks of one of the major weaknesses, I would say, of the game, basically, because the actual like storytelling and interaction between the pilots and stuff is fine, but some of the initial characterization of the base characters feels super generic. Yes. Like, they all feel a little bit weak, and without the presence of the Star Fox crew there, which does feel a little tacked on in places, it feels a bit like, hey, we've elbowed these guys into this cutscene here and you can barely tell, kind of thing, and you're like, I can tell.
I think it's more noticeable when you're playing the game and you've got the character in the corner, the little floating head in the corner, and the narration's going on, that there's it's meant to have a swapped out character rather than the actual cutscenes.
Yeah, there's a slight
itself.
Disconnect at places,
whereas the cutscenes, yeah. I'd imagine without Fox McCloud and Slippy and Peppy and Falco, it would look like a bunch of Fortnite characters with really badly developed accents.
Yeah, and like, There is some of the characters there that I've liked, mm-hmm. basically. And as I said, the actual like storytelling and universe development I like. I just, if you took every single character out of the game and I never saw them again, I wouldn't be unhappy. They're not just generic. They're almost like sugar-coatedly, like, bland kind of thing. And just like slight stereotypes. It's almost like the space surfer dude kind of thing.
Yeah.
And just like over archetyped type thing. You know what I mean? Like not fleshed out real characters kind of thing. But that is literally almost the only criticism I have. In terms of gameplay, I really like what it does. It from a point of view of being a Star Fox fan, you could view this as possibly the best Star Fox game. Maybe ever,
especially after the Wii U version.
Especially since the Wii U version. But you could essentially just play it as an open world Star Fox game, and that is a very good thing, and it's a very good example of that. If you take Star Fox out of the equation, I still think it's a very playable, enjoyable game. The like base game of what you're doing in terms of building the ship is fun. There is a whole element here which we haven't quite introduced, which I'll start bringing into the conversation. There is a Toys to Life element, and I got sent some of those toys. So like, yeah. That has less than a thing. The one offset there is I deliberately went and then bought some of the additional toys so that I was able to give a perspective on that and talk about those as well, basically.
And because you like toys.
And because I like toys.
You like filling the flat with tat.
Big kid. But yeah, but just for the record,
I've got two questions.
Yeah,
sorry. One, do you feel that they do actually add a lot more value into the game long term? And two, are you able to stick them up your bunghole? I'm asking for a friend.
I'm not answering the second question in general principle. But to the first, like, they literally add weight, which is my only negative to it, basically. Like, it makes the pad weigh more. And also, there is a whole weird kind of, you have to navigate through the whole pricing structure of what you're buying and what you get in return. Yeah. The digital version of the game with everything in it is hard to recommend. Because it is a high price.
It's like £90?
Yeah. But that gives you everything you want, and it gives you a bit more than you need, right? Literally, I think the only thing you need, as in everything you would ever need in the game, is three ships and two things. And I think you get access to more digital ships than just that in the original starter pack or the original digital version. This is something there are full articles on, and I will link to some.
Yeah, it was weird because you were playing with a ship, and then if your ship was destroyed, then you needed to swap ships, but you didn't have any. But if we were playing two player, I had free access to all the starter stuff.
Yeah, there's some really weird things within the game that make you go, "What? Like, I'm disadvantaged for having the toy," but that is slightly because I have access to the full digital version. That's why I'm saying I'm in a weird position that isn't necessarily reflective of what someone that bought the starter pack would be in. But at the same time, I haven't used some of the weapons in the game. I've looked at them and I've played with them, but I also played a couple in preview, so I know what some of them done. And also I've played with Coleman, so he's played around with a few as well. So I was glad that I bought the extra weapon pack that I bought because it gave me access to two more weapons. And I think that's a very valuable thing. And you get a pair of weapons for £10, which is not horrific, basically, kind of thing. It's basically DLC where you're paying for a physical thing. I'm glad I did that. Also, just because if you get one of the gravity weapons, or particularly one of the gravity weapons, they actually light up and glow, which not the base weapons don't, basically, that you get with the original starter pack. So that just, it's a very tiny thing, but it looks quite cool. It's not something where I would necessarily say that you have to have the toy to add enjoyment to the game. The one thing it makes a little bit smoother is that you can, in the game, you can swap weapons in and out, basically. And you can just do that from a menu. You could do that in a menu. But you can just physically remove the weapon, strap it on,
On the EGX show, it was quite satisfying just to be able to go, this weapon's not good for this pop that in and out there. It's worth mentioning, because you did say that the ship adds weight because it's attached to the controller. It's worth mentioning because the three main Toys to Life before this is the amiibo system, which you take an amiibo, you press it on a controller, you take amiibo away, put it down. With Skylanders and Lego Dimensions as a portal that's attached to the console, not the controller. You put things on there, you leave them there. This is a thing that is attached to your controller.
Also, we'll just talk about the slight differences between the platforms there again, because the Starwing and Star Fox content is unique to this. Also, the controller for the Switch version is slightly different. Basically, for the PS4 and the, I need to say 360 there, but for the Xbox One, it's a clip type thing that clips onto a controller and then you lock everything into place on top of that, basically. This is slightly different on the Switch because you slide in the two Joy-Cons either side of a kind of housing that then that slides into. I don't have too much problem. Like I said, it adds a little bit of weight. It's not very heavy. It just feels a little bit, not necessarily top, like front heavy, but it feels like a little bit like the weight is not necessarily concentrated towards the back as I would like it to be, kind of thing. That aside, and that is a very slight thing, the bigger thing I found is, I don't know if it's just the housing or just the Joy-Cons in general, but I find it really easy to accidentally hit the small
left bumper.
I
think that's just the controllers in general, because I was playing without the silly ship stuck to the top, and that I just mean that in the case of I hate playing with the thing on top of the controller, but I played with just regular Joy-Cons in the cradle, and I kept hitting the wrong thing constantly because they are quite tetchy at some times.
Yeah, and that's the only reason that's a problem is because that's your power that's on a really long cooldown timer. And worth mentioning as well, that's the other reason I liked using Fox McCloud over the other pilots, because each pilot gets a different special power. And his special power is really powerful and really good, also because I've leveled it up. But then, it basically brings down the whole rest of your team. And regardless of the fact that it's really good and really strong within the game, it also has the theme tune from the...
Yeah, that was really annoying, because I was playing as my little dude. It's like, oh, hit your special power. And then this little shield comes up in front. It's like, what's your special power? And then the rest of the cast come in. It's like, dun, 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 dun. I was like, why don't I get that? That's really cool.
And that's why I say, like, it's things like that that just add an extra dimension to the Switch version of the game that makes that a much easier recommendation than the other two versions. Also, I think the game will run and look slightly better, possibly, and I think that's the case from what you said on Xbox One and PS4, but it looks beautiful in handheld mode, and it's really good. And, like, you can, you know, completely disconnect all the toys and just have your Joy-Cons on the side and play digitally, and then you can have access to those more ships. As I said, that's the weird thing that we didn't really discuss through, is the fact that, when you've got just the toy, if that dies, you have to respawn rather than having an effective extra life of having bringing another ship. That gets weird because it sounds like you then need to buy six ships to get the best out of the game. But the game is not structured in the way that that would actually be advantageous to you. The only way that you would want all six ships, and I say six because I think there's eight available in America, but we don't have
two of them
in the UK because, they're store exclusives. Hopefully we'll get them at some point.
So five if you're in the UK and playing on PlayStation or Xbox.
I think there's a slight different ship. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Okay. So, sounds like a recommend them, but there are a fair few caveats.
That's the thing. There's a minefield of caveats in terms of what you need to go through and what you need to say just because they've added extra things. And I think that's a slight shame because I really think the base of what they got is really good and really enjoyable. There's a part of me that thinks if they just made it a Star Fox game with all the extra toys and just got Nintendo on board, it could have been a lot more successful. I'm not saying it won't be successful. I'm hoping it will be. I'd really like to see where the series goes in general and how it develops. And this is something I'm really on board for, to the point of I'm like, I wonder what other ship I'll buy, kind of thing. Well, but just to finish the point, that game doesn't support extra ships, the full collection of the six extra ships. You might want them if you're a collector, but within the game you'd only ever really want two or three ships because of the level of like mod support and the level of mods that you'd have at a high level.
You would be able to level them up in time,
and basically. Also, each ship has a level itself and each weapon has a level and all these type of things, so you can transfer the weapons each time you do it, but that's a bit of a pain anyway. But then ideally you'd want to have those ships, we're already with their weapons already modded up and all that type of stuff, and you'd only ever in that case want two or three ships, basically. So it's not quite as bad as the game, and or you know, as badly structured as some people would
would make have you believe by just going by the numbers.
But there is an asteroid filled with caveats. I made it sci-fi.
Yeah.
So while we still have today, and today is, of course, Rusev Day, Chris, what have you been playing on this Rusev Day?
I've been playing WWE 2K19. I'm going to quickly point out, because if you've been listening for a long time, you may have noticed that I wasn't too pleased with this series last year and went as far as to say it put me off the series and that I wouldn't be picking up the Asias version. This year, I've been looking very closely because it's very hard to stop buying a game in a series that you've been buying since, well, for decades, basically. Yeah. And when, so I was holding out for a review before the game actually came out, because I was worried about glitches and frame rates and all these big problems they had with the previous game. And the three of us have played it together last year and we all had problems with it. We played the Royal Rumble and we couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
We played a game where a character's leg was stretched across the ring.
Asuka was like tearing someone across the ring and then the game glitched out and we also had that amazing moment where I did a simple reverse when you fell through a table and lost the table match.
Yes, that was fun. So there was, again, a caveat of issues with this one. So so this time I was more dubious about it. And in fact, it turned out that it didn't seem to be a review embargo because no big places were reviewing it until the game came out later, which is weird to me. But people had bought the game. If you spend a silly amount of money, you get the super edition with the season pass and stuff. You get the game 5 days early. So people were doing their Twitch streams and things. And I watched a lot of those and went, okay, I'm buying it. Sod it. I'm getting it. I'm going to put my money down and hopefully I don't regret this. And I don't. This is brilliant.
Phew.
It's brilliant.
I can't stand another year of Coleman.
Me moaning about it.
Yeah, bad WWE year.
I'm still playing it every time I come over anyway because it's an easy drunk game.
Yeah. We do like playing that game when we're drunk. So pretty much this is the same as last year in terms of controls and systems and things. And pretty much the look of it, we're playing footage right here while we're recording now. It looks pretty much the same as last year as well. It's an updated roster. It's your typical sports game that comes out annually. The big difference is there are more game modes added. When you do 8-player matches, it doesn't make the game crap the bed. But there's also a thing called 2K Towers, which is essentially a ripoff of Mortal Kombat Towers. But you'll pick a character and you'll have to tear through a designated roster of characters, maybe 5 different wrestlers, maybe 15 different wrestlers on various difficulty settings and with different caveats put in place with each match stipulation. The big one of that is it leads to, which is called the $1 million tower, which you have to play as AJ Styles and fight 15 other wrestlers on legendary difficulty. And whenever you take damage, it then carries on to the next player. If you've saved a finisher, that finisher saves onto the next match as well. If you get through all that, you get entered into a raffle where if you win the raffle, you then go to the US to WrestleMania to fight AJ Styles at the game in real life in the WrestleMania arena while it's empty. And if you win that, you win $1 million.
Nice.
However, if you know, without all that in place, you win like a gold skin AJ Styles, which is quite nice as well. The other big mode is they've returned showcase modes, which are like their story mode, which follow things that have actually happened in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And this one is the story.
Actually happened
in wrestling.
Real life.
This one is the story of Daniel Bryan, which I really like. It goes through, because Daniel Bryan is he's a wrestler who became a much bigger deal than in all right he should have been. He's a very small guy. He's a very talented indie wrestler, so he should have been crapped on in the WWE. But he managed to go to WrestleMania, win the main event, become the champion, spoilers, and then had to retire and later managed to come back after a career-ending injury. But before all that, he came to the WWE, he wrestled under his actual name, which is Daniel Bryanson. Bryan Danielson is Daniel Bryan. They tend to change people's names so they can copyright them. And he came in and he wrestled a guy who would then become John Cena much later, who's like the big I Am in WWE. And they had this throwaway match that was actually quite good. And no one saw it because it was on a Velocity, a C-rated show. And years later, he gets to these lofty heights in WrestleMania. And you get to play through all that progression. It's a really fun thing. And they do these intros to each segment done by Daniel Bryan, like explaining his thoughts behind what happened. He even goes to talk about when he first came to the WWE and he's in this company called NXT, which was now is like a developmental show. At the time, it was like a reality TV mixed with wrestling thing that everyone hated. And he just talks about how crap it was, candidly, in a WWE product, which is great. So there's all these kind of things. But then they'll do cut scenes that are essentially the actual audio from the show that are which is done in time to the cut scenes that they've made in game, which is kind of cool, but glitchy as well at times, but very funny. So all that is great. I played for all that. I absolutely loved that. Big Daniel Bryan fan. That worked out great. Online is functioning a lot better than I've seen it in many years, which is also brilliant. And, and they put in an actual, like, you can create a character and play through a story, which involves you being an indie wrestler, working your way up to be in the WWE. That's quite fun as well. Quite in depth. Yeah, it's really good. There are some weird systems that look like they were setting them up for microtransactions, but there are no microtransactions.
It's all to pull away from that.
Yeah, you literally buy these loot packs just for this My Player story where you create the character and do all this stuff. If you want to unlock different attires and different colors for and taunts and stuff and moves, you get them in literal sticker packs that you have, like loot packs that you have to open in the game and get your items that way. But if you want to just make a character outside of that, then everything is free reign for you to use. So that's quite nice.
Yeah. Sorry, it's because I remember we were discussing this last year when A-Team came out and you were saying that you were very, very worried that that was the system they were going to put in this year.
Yeah.
The question I do have for you regarding last year's one in comparison to this one is, do you kind of feel that they really sort of underdid last year in order to put more resources into this one? Because if you know what I mean, like the 2K Towers, $1 million mode, comprehensive story mode, those are all things that take like quite a lot of time. That's not something they could do within a year.
I don't think anyone ever sets out to make a bad game.
No.
But I think there are years where they will take a slight hit in terms of this is the year we're developing the engine and the next year is where we're developing the features.
You have to do that a bit thing. Everyone did that with like 2014 where it was very much like kind of a placeholder before they really updated with 15.
What this feels like is when WWE 2K15 came out, which was the first PlayStation 4 and Xbox One game, and to put a show of how rocky that development was going, they ended up pulling back the this generation version of the game and then releasing the previous generation version of the game first, because that was the more stable version that was coming out. What they did was they decided new generation, people want to change. We're going to make brand new fighting systems, and they made it more like an MMA game, and everyone hated it. So the next year they went back to the old engine. They went back to the old systems and they just polished the holy hell out of it, made this Stone Cold Steve Austin storyline. It was much better. And we did a video of it on YouTube. It was great. We fought a Big Red Barrelcast, but we couldn't get the online working because sod Xbox. And so it kind of feels like that's what they've done this year. There's not a massive amount in change of the looks and the feel of the game, but it feels a hell of a lot more polished than last year. The stuff they have made additions to. Yeah, okay. Showcase mode, there's quite a lot of work gone into that, and in the single player kind of My Player mode. But the 2K Towers, I'd argue, you know, if you've got the systems in place, that is something you could have done quite easily. Says the guy who's never developed a game in his life. But it seems like more
comparatively
work. The majority of the work this year has gone into making it work properly, which is good. And they've axed there was no Switch port this year because, oh, that was bad last year.
Okay, I have a sensible question and maybe some silly ones if we have time. But as a fan of the game, from knowing how this worked out this year and how it worked out before, what do you want them to do going forward for next year's one? Like, would you prefer that they just kept stuck with this engine and added more features and added more content? Or would you prefer that next year they look to develop again, basically?
I mean, guessing as we're not going to be that long in this generation of consoles, going forward for what's left of this, you know, this cycle, I would like if they work on stability in this engine, add the new rosters, add the new, you know, new matches, that kind of stuff, and don't work on the big things. And then maybe, like, you could have a half team working on this game for the next couple of iterations, and then have the next, you know, the other team working on.
I'd argue if you're putting out one a year, you probably need a fairly substantial team to be working on just this anyway. But and then, right, sillier questions. How many versions of Undertaker is there in the game?
Two.
How many versions?
Or three.
Of Hulk Hogan?
None.
Good.
Both the correct answers.
I think he was still out at this point.
Yeah, I have a question. Yeah. Is it still not even remotely a patch on Here Comes the Pain?
Actually, I think this is getting more like it.
Oh, okay.
You can actually do that thing now where you, if you're fighting in a last man standing or a hardcore match or something, you can just walk off around the arena and go fight in different various areas, which is nice because they brought in backstage brawls a while ago, but it was something you started out backstage and that was it. This is, you could be in the ring and go, stuff it. Let's go fight out the back now.
Steve.
It's quite fun.
Steve.
Yeah. those are fun times. I'm really enjoying it. I'm glad I picked it up.
I am so glad. It's like the whole groundhog thing. It feels like we would have had 3 more months of winter if Coleman wasn't happy with WWE.
This does feel like WWE 2K16's just come back out again. It's the exact same thing with me. It's the same game as before, but it's great. It's fine.
I've got another question. Can you use a bicycle to basically beat someone half to death?
No.
Can you do karaoke?
No.
Can you do a hostess club?
No, but they do have Shockmaster's helmet and creator
mode. I think that sounds like a buy to me.
So we're gonna run a little bit. Well, I mean, we've already run along, but we're gonna sod it. Dan's not here. Daddy's not here to tell us off. So Tim.
Yeah, Daddy. Yes.
Rather than keep you in check, I'm gonna break all the rules. I'm gonna lift up the ban where you're allowed to talk about PSVR again.
Oh my word.
And it's not because one of my friends works on this game. Go.
Right. It kind of is. Look, I've only played a little bit, so I will touch on this and come back to it in VRB anyway. But just to say, there is a plethora of really good games that have been hitting PSVR, and I haven't really had a chance to talk about them. Astrobot is an absolute delight, and I'll come back to that in a minute. But the one that you wanted me to talk about, and that I did get a chance to play, and came out, it's been out in the States for a while, but it came out in the UK Tuesday this week, so it's kind of fresh off the boat type thing. But a game called Pixel Rift 1989.
Pixel Ripped, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah,
what did
you
I
said
say?
Rift.
Okay.
It's funny because we did this the other
whole
way around
VR
before.
Thing, anyway. Anyway, Pixel Ripped 1989. And yeah, this is a fantastic game, one I've been really looking forward to. It definitely, literally speaks to my childhood type of thing. There are other things that I really don't want to spoil that you kind of see on the intro in the game. Like, there's some stuff that you've probably seen, but generally, the premise of the game is that you are, at least in the first level, sitting at the back of a classroom, trying to distract your teacher so that she doesn't notice that you're trying to get to the end of a Game Boy level, basically.
Yes.
And you have to get to the end of that level before that school day.
Legally different Game Boy.
Yeah, legally different Game Boy. But it is essentially a Game Boy in the palm of your hand, and it's a little kind of platformer. And you know, if I'm playing a platformer, it has to be inventive. And it's really, really stupid. There are really silly distractions. You've basically got a blow dart type thing that you're spitting spit wads out of to hit things to just
pea shooter.
Pea shooter type thing, yeah. To then distract the teacher so that she doesn't see that you're playing away, basically. And so there's things that you can do, like you can hit the projector, and the projector will come up with a picture that someone's drawn of her that's a bit rude, and so she goes off on one about that and turns her back to you so that you can carry on playing. Or you can hit the boombox that's sitting, and it is old school boombox type thing because it's 80s. You can hit the boombox to set the music off, so it means that she'll go over and complain about the loud music and the hibbity hops, and she sounds a bit too much like Dan when she's complaining about it. But you can do this general distractions just so that you have enough time to get through the level. And it feels like this really odd thing of patting your head and rubbing your stomach type thing of trying to do two things at once and trying to manage both of them. But it's really well done, really ingenious. There's other little bits and bobs on the way in. Also, just within the game itself, the character that you have relies on pixels, and you're picking up different pixels. And if you get hit in the same way like Sonic would lose his rings, you lose those pixels. But the character you have in game depixelizes the more health you've lost.
That sounds a bit Pixel Jumper.
Yeah, so you start with this the little kind of and it looks like a Game Boy character-esque graphics type thing. But you can build her up to have more armor if you pick up more pixels. But then as you get more and more hit, you'll literally go down to a point of being a couple of pixels. And if you get hit at that point, you can die, basically, and then have to start again. And even if it was just that mechanic within a Game Boy game, that would be quite inventive and quite cool and quite a good thing. And then it's got all these other layers on top of it. Like, you'll explode into, like, other areas that will be, like, more of a puzzle within the kind of VR space and stuff as well. And I don't want to say much more than that because I don't want to spoil it. But really genius, really good. As I said, like, PSVR is really hitting its stride at the moment. There's been some great games that I have and haven't played. This is definitely up there just as an experience that particularly talks to my childhood as well, which is really cool.
And Beat Saber's coming. Yay.
Also, just if I can squeeze it in very quickly, if it can be cheeky, Valkyria Chronicles 4. Easy for me to say. I've been playing,
say you love it.
I've been playing on the Switch. I do kind of love it, but also at the same time, man, does that game squeeze in all the story it possibly can and then a bit more. Like, it's got literally about five times as much story as it needs. I really love the gameplay. I could do without half of the story at least, basically. But also my advice is, if you've never played the series before, the first one, I believe, just came out today on Switch. And if you haven't played that one, that's like a fifth of the price and probably almost as good. So you may just want to pick that one up.
I was thinking of picking it up at some point because I got Okami for the flight to Japan and then never played it because I was playing Xenoblade Chronicles 2 because I worked on that one. So I was just like, you know, I want to play that a bit. But
there is a lot of game content in there because as well as the main story, there's a lot of like subplots and there's a lot of skirmishes and other battles and stuff that you can do. But a bit overstoried for me. I mean, it reminds me of Attack on Titan.
Okay.
I really like the action bits. I just get a little bit bored when they stop the action and talk about their feelings for too long. And yeah, that's exactly where I am with that series as well. Like, I really love it. It's graphically, like, I really like the graphical style. I really like the kind of, it's a turn-based strategy, but where you're in control of the people and you can take control of the person and you've got like physical movement action that you need to worry about and stuff as well. But yeah, that enjoyable, but yeah, with the too much story for me, but hey,
good.
So maybe pick it up, but would you recommend that people play Valkyria Chronicles 1 first? Is it like that sort of series where you need to have played the previous one?
I don't think you have to, but they don't do as much explaining of the general world setting in this. It's much more the you're into another battle again almost kind of thing. They talk about Galia and that's what they're defending, but it kind of got wiped out, and so yeah, I don't think you see any of that basically. But yeah, like I played 1 and I think 2, but I didn't play 3, and I don't think I'm particularly missing out, but I think it would be handy to have some of the world building if that's something you really care about. When they're giving you this much story, you kind of have to a little bit.
I feel like games like that really do need like a catch-up system in them. To go back to my one, in Kiwami 2, right at the beginning of the game, there is an option to have the entire story of the first game explained to you through cutscenes, and it takes like 10 minutes or so. But then by the end of it, it explains pretty much every major beat, and then it immediately allows you to just launch into the rest of the story without you going, okay, who's this person? What is this? What? Like, I feel like more games need something like that because it was optional as well.
I don't know if there's any like characters that you necessarily need to be aware of. But as I said, it's just the general kind of world building, and I think they did more explaining, or I just have more understanding having played the first one than is necessarily given in this one. But I don't think that's super crucial, aside from the fact that you might be like a bit lost when you're first going into until you get a bit more explaining of what's going on, basically.
Yeah, but eventually you've got full control of all your warriors. And speaking of which, Chris.
Yeah, final thing, and just because I really got to talk about it this week, warriors. All right, I'm going to see if I can get this right. I was told how to say this.
Oh, good.
Is it Orochi?
Is it Orochi? Because I've been saying
Orokai. No, they're not Orokai.
Warriors Orochi 4. We'll call it Orochi, which is which, if you really want to get confused, it's Musou Orochi 3 in Japan, because they're one behind in Japan for some reason.
How did that happen? They're normally like 7 ahead.
And to give even more confusion to this, Warriors Orochi 4 is the 5th installment in the Warriors Orochi series.
This is like the Metal Gear Solid 5 of like, okay, well, 3's the prequel, but also 5 is the sequel to 3, and 4 is the end one.
I don't know what Koei Tecmo are playing at, but they're on summon over there. But anyway, they are super nice people, and they let me come out and play Warriors Orochi 4 before the game released last week, which was super nice of them. This, if you don't know, it's a mashup of Dynasty Warriors and Samurai Warriors, and the idea is in these series, those two rosters, so different people from those rosters get put together in different realms, and they have to fight the story of that clash. Yeah, what they have to fight that clash. This time, the way three has ended is the day has won and they're off back to their respective dimensions when, oh no! Zeus and the rest of the Greek gods have decided to warp the two factions over to a different dimension where they will do more fighting. And that then brings in 170 playable characters.
Oh, Jesus.
Across the two series of villains and good guys, as well as new characters, bosses, and Greek gods.
Which, just in case anyone was wondering, because I know everyone was wondering, that is a Guinness World Record.
Yes, literally.
For the number of playable characters in a hack and slash game.
Yes.
Oh, that's quite the qualifier.
They have a record-breaking game, which is quite cool.
It gives me anxiety just thinking about that.
And there are some really cool characters in there, because the build I got to play was basically all the characters are unlocked, all the characters are super max level.
Did you have the additional 7 hours you needed to go through and decide which character to play?
I found it easier to go to the bottom and pick the most powerful-looking one, because I don't really know. I played a lot of Dynasty Warriors and Dynasty Warriors 2, and then stopped.
I've played more of the spin-offs than I've played of the regular series.
I played Vita one for a while, but didn't really get along with it. And I really liked Hyrule Warriors as well.
Yeah, I played a bit of that, and I played a bit of a lot more of the Fist and All Star. Yeah, one, but yeah.
So I had to be open when I turned up, and they go, "You big fan of the series?" Like, nope, not at all. But I hope to learn. and I really, really like this. This felt like old school Dynasty Warriors that I'm used to playing, so it didn't get too confusing for me.
Mm.
So this, you have a team of three characters that you get to play as, which you can swap on the whim, just by, using your...
On the whim?
On a whim.
On a whim, yeah.
Yeah.
It was on the whim.
I know I said on the whim, but yeah. I'm trying to deny it.
Sorry. So you swapped them on the wind. That's what he meant.
You can use, your triggers to swap on the fly, which character you'd like out of the three, which is quite nice. And there's also a super special power, which means the three will turn up and like, summon a giant bolt of energy and attack people with it. It looks really, really cool and just obliterates everyone on screen. The aim of the game, you'll be given a slight open world map where you go through. It will go, hey, this sergeant needs taking out. You go for that sergeant. This sergeant needs taking out. And
here's a billion people on screen for you to
and
then there's,
and you, yeah, that's it. You can quite easily pick up a combo of 1,000 deaths, you know. And I did many times in just the single playthrough and it felt good. And I love these games for that very reason. And at some point the story will dictate that different ones of your generals are then in trouble, so you have to go defend them or kill new guys that come on screen, or a boss might turn up, and that's pretty much the gist of it. The difference with this game, as well as the three players, is they've introduced magic. So there's now magic abilities as well. You can hold down, I think it's the right bumper, left bumper, sorry, and hit the attack button. And if you're using a fast attack or a strong attack, it will change what that thing is. You might have a ranged attack where you can aim at people from afar and take them out, or you might have something strong, which just takes everyone around you.
Can I ask, from how many characters did you get to play?
170.
No. How many characters did you actually get to play through in the time? Because it's just that would make sense to my next question.
I played about 15 characters, and then at some point I was playing two player, which added like another 9 characters to the mix.
Oh, Jesus.
So
he wasn't in there.
No.
So Greek gods.
Greek gods.
Keep up, Ed.
Come on.
It's just so many gods.
Not American gods. Anyway. But yeah, like, would you say that there was enough variety there? Because, and I'll give you a bit more meat to go on that generally, but strange way to phrase that.
Yeah. Go on. Say you love it.
I'll flesh that out a little bit more. That sounds even worse.
Give Coleman more of your meat. For him to put on his bone.
But no, but basically, yeah, like, I would normally say when they were showing off about having 170 playable characters in the game, I'd be like, well, they're all just reskins of other things. But from my understanding of it, it's two game rosters stuck together that probably had quite big game rosters.
Yeah, they've all got their own unique abilities.
So that's what I was going to say. Like, do they all feel like reasonably well fleshed out because they have been before, and it's just a lot of variations within the same engine, basically.
I mean, in terms of running around, hacking, slashing, not really. Some are faster than others, but in terms of their abilities, yes, they feel unique enough, and they've got their own place on the story, obviously, and their own lines and things. And everyone feels fleshed out that way. But if you're just running and hacking and slash, which you are for the most of the game, they do feel very similar, unless you're like a big super, like we're watching footage as a big super guy that you can play as on screen. He has very slow, heavy attacks, and then other ones have smaller, faster attacks, that kind of thing. But then when you're using the magical abilities, that's where it really changes up. For instance, I played as Ares, and Ares summons a dragon, and then you just fly around on a dragon, blasting people with fire. It's great.
Cool.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun with this. I hope to play this myself more. And I'm hoping to get some of this on the extra live stream that we'll be doing soon, which I'll talk about in a second. And Koei Tecmo were nice enough to give us some prizes that we'll be doing something for extra life.
Extra special prizes. Extra special life. Those prizes, aren't they?
So while I'm talking about extra life, because we are going to have to wrap it up now, on the 3rd of November, that's when we're doing Extra Life officially, Big Red Barrel. Mm-hmm. Some of us are doing 24-hour streams, some of us are doing 12-hour streams. We're going to try and work out something with the three of us and see if we can make something super entertaining out of this. We're going to do the full details next week's show. We'll announce what we're actually doing for Extra Life, Dan, me, Tim, possibly Ed, see if we can get some information of everyone else over on and see what they're doing as well and give out some more substantial details. If you go over to bigredbarrel.com, I don't think it's up yet, but we're going to have an Extra Life thing which will give links to everyone's donation pages and what have you and what games they're playing. But also you can go over to Extra Life and there's a little search bar in the corner. Just look up Big Red Barrel. It'll bring up a whole roster of people that are taking part this year. Go donate some money. It'll be great. Mm-hmm. And like I say, we're going to try to give some incentive for you that are donating and see if we can give out some prizes as well, which should be fun. Something I haven't done since my first Extra Life, giving out prizes on the stream.
No. Yeah, we've got some good prizes to give.
We got some good stuff.
I might be able to chip some things in for that as well.
Ooh.
I was going to say, I don't 100% know what my plan... all I know is I'm going to be joining you two. I don't know how long for yet, but I'll try... I'm basically going to try and see how long I can stick it out for. I might show up when you guys are about 4 or 5 hours in, just as the fatigue is there. Like I said earlier, I might try and like sneak up and just... troll you guys for basically like 16, 17 hours until I'm eventually kicked out. Or we'll have a really, really great time because at the end of the day, it's all for charity and it's an amazing course.
We might have to do something similar to this where we just set up the table and we'll do a live stream.
Well, that'd be lovely.
Can play and live
stream. If you like the podcast, if you like this podcast, then the specific episode, then we're going to do one of these for 24 hours.
Yeah. And if you don't, well, then I make no apologies. I'm sorry, there are no refunds.
Hour 20 is going to be interesting.
Well, Tim, there's nothing that our good friend Cocaine can't
Oh my God.
Whoa!
Mr. Cocaine will help us very much.
I think we'd rather be sponsored by energy drinks He's than the legal... Class A substances.
He's the fellow that lives downstairs. He's really lively and he likes cheering people up.
Isn't Mr. Cocaine the dude from Ubisoft? Can we just get him on the stream?
Oh, God, yeah, I forgot about him. Yeah, okay.
Hi, I'm on this E for Everyone stream and here I am talking about Class A narcotics.
Anyway. Talking about super happy fun times.
Didn't they have a Mr. Caffeine as well?
That's who we were thinking. Yeah,
not Mr. Cocaine. Mr.
Cocaine was the post shit.
Both may be, I'm not saying anything disparaging about South American countries, but both may be exported from South America, but on slightly different planes. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
So now they can't get Aisha's Hilo back, they'll go for Mr. Cocaine. But speaking of special occasions, there's a special date coming up soon. I think it's Rusev. No, it's a Tuesday, and I'm kind of new to being on this podcast with you, but I'm not quite sure what happens on a Tuesday.
You're not sure what happens on a Tuesday?
On a Tuesday.
Why? Ed, each and every Tuesday, we do an event called Tabletop Tuesday. And I would have thought you'd known this, having been to the event on numerous occasions before.
On a Tuesday, probably.
Yeah, mainly on a Tuesday.
I think I went to a Wednesday one once.
Ah, you went to Hungry Hungry Hippos Wednesday.
Tabletop Tuesday is always a great time.
Each and every Tuesday we do an event called Tabletop Tuesday, and each Tuesday we have a different feature game. If you play that feature game that evening, you have a chance of winning a copy of the game at the end of the night. This week's feature game is a little game. Little things coming in great packages, or great things that, coming in.
That's what
in
I say to all my girlfriends, yeah.
Yep, yep. But a game called Pocket Mars, and yeah, it's like...
Gotta catch them all.
Good little strategy game packed into a small box in a small amount of time. But yeah, it's supposed to be pretty good. It could be a good one to win because you don't have to carry a big thing home.
Yeah.
But, you know, big things make good prizes, but not when you're having to carry them home afterwards, maybe.
Yeah.
We do tend to give Big Red Barrel bags away occasionally just to help out with that. But, you know.
They are nice bags, to be fair.
They are nice bags. But yeah, this week, no bag necessary because it can fit in your pocket. And yeah, there are more details up on bigredbarrel.com in the top left-hand corner, or you can go and...
to the meetup page.
To the meetup page and search for Tabletop Tuesday on Meetup to find more details and join our ever-growing group of people on meetup.com.
Yeah. I'm surprised I knew that, considering that I didn't know what Tabletop Tuesday was three minutes ago.
You may be feigning ignorance for the point of audio delight.
I think it's just because I was getting it confused with Rusev Day, the most important day of them all.
Good.
It's my dad's birthday today,
I'm afraid.
Oh, well, we should.
So that's Pocket Mars, Tabletop Tuesday, The Loading Bar, Dalston, London on the 23rd of October, which also happens to be Rusev Day. Anyway, one last order of business before we go. We have to say thank you to a few people. So first of all, on Twitter, thank you to Andy Baines. Thank you to Norman Was Here. Thank you to Not Really All That Scary Gabriel. You see, he's done a comedy Halloween Twitter name. Hey. Yeah. Facebook Tim.
You full named me at the beginning of the episode. Now you're labelling me Facebook Tim when I don't even have Facebook.
He's just got Instagram, okay? No. He's catching up to the zeitgeist.
Stop it or read them all out myself.
Big thanks to Freya Goddard and also from YouTube. Oh, we should have answered this in the fullness of time. But yeah, 1805 Games is Forza Horizon 4 now a good reason to buy an Xbox One? I would say it is a great game and really worth playing, but not quite enough of an incentive to buy an Xbox One in isolation by itself.
If you get an Xbox One on the cheap and you fancy getting a Game Pass, then I would say it's worth it for that. But that said, if you've got a top powerful PC, just get it for that.
What if you've got an Xbox Game Pass but no internet connection as we had this evening? Hey.
Yeah, so before we were starting, I'd finished setting up and went, oh, I've got an hour left. I'm going to play me some Forza Horizon 4. And I went to load it up, goes, nope, you need an internet connection in order to play the game to verify it, because the internet had conked out in the flat and came up just before we started recording. So that was nice. Thanks, Microsoft. Didn't trust me.
Yeah. Cheers.
I mean, to be fair, you've been playing my copy through the Game Pass. So
yeah.
They have reason to not believe to trust us.
You have form,
but you seem like such trustworthy fellows.
Anyway, thank you. I like that. More questions. Ask us questions about games specifically, but you can ask us anything. Really.
In the future, we may actually, you know, remember to ask them in a fuller. Answer them in a.
Well, I think if we get more questions, then we'll give them their own little segment. Yeah. That'll be nice. Or interweave them within the games we're playing and the news we're talking about.
And ask us a question you want to interact on
much
the forums.
Like more
on Twitter.
Popular podcasts have done before us.
Yeah.
I've always wanted you guys to do a mailbag section since you stopped doing the Great British Delay.
Bake Off. Yeah.
Maybe you could
don't
do Great British
people about that.
Maybe you could do that based off questions from the audience.
Way too many cakes.
Yeah.
It doesn't work in audio.
Soggy bottom.
Yeah. Great British Debate based off audience questions. How about that for an idea?
Yeah, I mean, we tried that.
And it's bad.
I mean, this is all conversation that's going to be happening off mic, but okay.
No. They have to, like, know that we're breaking the fourth wall. Ah. They have to, like, that's what makes it good.
Yeah.
You know, everything's good if you break the fourth wall. Just ask David Cage.
I forgot to mention Carl.
Oh.
Poor Carl.
Poor Carl.
Oh.
Poor Carl.
I'll mention him in a write-up.
Anyway, this has been episode 314 of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast. Be sure to come back for 315. Hopefully we've got the regular full crew back together, and we'll be unveiling our big Extra Life plans next week. So yes, make sure to be, I don't know why I'm going Shatner now. Yeah. Anyway.
What do you mean hopefully back to the regular cast? Was I not entertaining enough?
I'm sorry, Ed.
No, it's just like people always say they like our guests and like having different people on, but when it's not the three of us, there's always someone. Oh,
joke sound on Twitter. Tell Ed you love him. Is that better?
Yeah.
Also
yeah.
follow him. He likes that.
If I beat someone half to death with a bicycle like in Yakuza, will you like me then?
There you go. For this week, I have been Coleman.
I might have been Tim.
And I was the best one. I mean, I was Ed. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure being here.
You are the best one. It's fun. Oh.
Thanks, Ed. And until next time, dear listeners, goodbye!
You and your ears are quite welcome
for the podcasting goodness that you just heard.
Why not roll on over
to BigRedBarrel.com
for more podcasts,
news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.